Well, after he took the throne and secured it, Solomon's wisdom, which he had asked for, was well known nearly the world over. But his first task and his main task, which he had was instructed to do and which he was commissioned to do by David, and which God approved because God would not let David do it, was to build the house for God, the house of God, where God would dwell. His presence would be there in that building. And so Solomon began. He, master of organization, he put things together. He made alliances. He brought in gold from here and wood from there and all the things that needed to be done. And he organized and conscripted the workers. You'll see in chapter 5 that he levied forced laborers from Israel, and forced laborers numbered 30,000 men. Now, what we mean by forced, they weren't slaves. They weren't slaves, but you know how when you go to war, if our nation were suddenly thrust into a big war, they would start the draft. You would be conscripted. They would draft you into the service. And when you're drafted, you have to go. In other words, your country is calling on you. It's considered not loyal to if you don't go to the draft. So he drafted these people. These were conscripted people. They were paid, but hey, you have to get in here. This is your job. He conscripted them into the service of the temple, and that's what they did. Now he also, the Jebusites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, and the other sites that were all left over that Joshua failed to take out. He failed to push them out of Israel. Solomon forced them into slavery to go. They had to work too. So he built the temple. And in the building of the temple, it came about. The house was done. And then you see in 1 Kings chapter 6 and beginning in verse 11. Now the word of the Eternal came to Solomon concerning this house which you are building. So God's... Now, you know, Solomon got words from God about this house. If you will walk in my statutes and execute my ordinances and keep all my commandments by walking in them, then I will carry out my word with you which I spoke to David your father. I will dwell among the sons of Israel. I will not forsake my people Israel. Verse 13. So Solomon built the house and finished it. Then he built the walls of the house on the inside with the boards of cedar. From the floor to the house to the ceiling, he overlaid the walls on the inside with wood. He overlaid the floor of the house with boards of cypress. He built 20 cubits of the rear part of the house with the boards and of cedar and with the floor of the ceiling. He built it on the inside of the inner sanctuary, even the most holy place, and so on. And the house that is in the nave in the front, and so on. He finished this house. Now you read in verses 37, 38. I'm going to drop down. I'll read all of chapter 6. But here, verse 37 and 38. In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Eternal was laid in the month of Siv. In the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished throughout all its parts, according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. 7 years he built the house for God. And he had all, and with all these workers and all this, and overlaid all the gold and all the things that he did. Now, Solomon was a big builder, and he was a very wise builder. He built fortresses. He fenced the cities. He did a lot of other things. He was a very wise in how he structured and built that nation. Now, verse 1 of chapter 7 tells us this. Now, as for Solomon, now Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished all his house. Now, we don't need to make an assumption that, you know, he paid, He only spent 7 years in building God's house and 13 years in building his own. He may not have been able to conscript all the people. You know, you can't get all these people working on your own house. He built the house for himself, the king's mansion, so to speak. He was 13 years in building that. And it appears that those things were done sequentially, because we read in 1 Kings chapter 9 and verse 10, just this one verse, 1 Kings 9 verse 10, it came about at the end of 20 years in which Solomon had built the two houses. Now he had 7 years for the house of God and 13 years for the king's house. So he built them both. And at the end of 20 years of all this, he finished the buildings. So evidently, he built God's house first. Took him 7 years. 13 more years, he built the king's mansion. You finish this house. This has got to be an enormous accomplishment. Enormous. He sent for the Ark of the Covenant. Bring that up to the house. We're going to put it in the Holy of Holies in this house for God, and where God's presence is going to be. And I want you to notice how he organized this. Solomon was a very good organizer. Verse 1 of chapter 8. Solomon assembled, this is chapter 8, verse 1. He assembled the leaders, the elders of Israel, and all the heads of the tribes. The leaders of the father's households of the sons of Israel, to King Solomon in Jerusalem. Now he wants all the heads of the tribes, all the heads of the fathers, all the heads of the elders in the cities and so on, to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal from the city of David, which is in Zion. It's a gigantic procession. Gigantic procession of all these people coming in. All the men of Israel assembled themselves to King Solomon at the feast in the month of Ethiam, which is the seventh month, and then all the elders of Israel came, and the priests took up the ark, and so on. I'm going to drop down to verse 9 and pick it up there. There was nothing in the ark except the two tables of stone, which Moses put there in Horeb, which the Eternal had made a covenant with Israel. You know, there are other things that should have been in there. There should have been the Aaron's rod that budded. There was the manna that had to be in there. But when they came out of the land of Egypt, so there was nothing in there. It happened that when the priests came from the holy place, the cloud filled the house of the Eternal. So here they come with this ark. You know, the priests are there. They come into the sanctuary. They're bringing this Ark of the Covenant. They're going to put it in the Holy of Holies. The priests could not stand to minister before the cloud, for the glory of the Eternal filled the house of the Eternal. Here's God's presence. God is putting his presence. Solomon was wise enough. All the people knew. You read from Isaiah, and later Isaiah knew. Isaiah said, well, where's the house you're going to build for me? Where can you capture God? God is so enormous. What they were building, they knew that God was not out of the heavens and here. They knew that. But God was going to place his name there. Therefore, a presence of God was in that house. Not God himself. God's presence. Where is God's presence today? Is it in you? Is God present in you? Is God present when his disciples get together? But that doesn't mean that God came out of the heavens when we say God is present with us. Jesus said, I will always be with you. I'll never forsake you, you know. It doesn't mean that he's out of heaven, because God's presence is more than just where God is. You understand that? That's where he's putting it, his presence in the house of the Eternal. Then Solomon said, the Eternal has said that he would dwell in thick clouds, and I have surely built you a lofty house, a place for your dwelling forever. You know, your presence is here, your dwelling. Then the king faced about and blessed all the assembly of Israel. while all the assembly of Israel was standing. I mean, he said good things, or thank you, you know, this is the great people. He's just saying good things when he says bless them. He didn't mean that everyone is going to get, a raise and, you know, all this. He was just praising them. Blessing means saying good things. He said, blessed be the eternal God of Israel, who spoke his name to my father, David, and fulfilled it with his hand, saying, since the day that I brought my people of Israel out from Egypt, I did not choose a city out of all the tribes of Israel in which to build a house, that my name might be there, but I chose David to be over my people Israel. Now it has in the heart of my father David to build a house for the name of the Eternal, the God of Israel. But the Eternal said to my father David, because it was in your heart to build the house for my name, you did well that it was in your heart. In other words, God praised David. It was good that you really wanted to do this. This was something you wanted to do for me. Nevertheless, you shall not build the house, but your son, who was born to you, he will build the house in your for my name. For my name. Notice the house is for my name. That's where God placed his name. That's where God was going to figuratively his presence would be. Now the Eternal has fulfilled his word that he spoke. For I have risen in the place of my father David. I sit on the throne of Israel as the Eternal promised, and have built the house for the name of the Eternal, the God of Israel. That's what he built it for. God's name is there. And when God places his name, that means his presence is there. There I have set a place for the ark, which is the covenant of the Eternal, which he made with our fathers when he brought them from the land of Egypt. So here is he's bringing this up. This is what I wanted to do. But you notice he doesn't say God wouldn't let my father do it because of he was a bloody man or he had blood on his hands through the murder of Uriah. He doesn't say that. Then Solomon stood before the altar of the Eternal. This is verse 22, chapter 8, 1 Kings, chapter 8, verse 22. Then Solomon stood before the altar of the Eternal in the presence of all the assembly of Israel and spread out his hands toward heaven. He said, now he's praying to God. This is a beautiful, unbelievably wonderful prayer directed to God. O Yahweh, that's what it is, the Eternal, the God of Israel, there is no God like you in heaven above or on earth beneath, keeping covenant and showing loving kindness to your servants. That's a covenant kindness. It means loving kindness, a covenant kindness. Who walk before you with all their heart, who have kept with your servant, my father David, that which you have promised him. Indeed, you have spoken with your mouth and have fulfilled it with your hand as it is this day. Notice he's giving God credit for this house even. You know, he's like God made it happen. Now therefore, O Eternal, the God of Israel, keep with your servant David, my father, that which you promised him, saying, you shall not lack a man to sit on the throne of Israel if your sons take heed to their way and walk before me as you have walked. Notice there's always that caveat. Well, will you be able to walk? Will you always have a son to sit on the throne? If you walk before me, if they walk before me. So that's always a caveat there. But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Now, Solomon he's aware of what he's doing. You see this? Listen to verse 27. But will God indeed dwell on the earth? In other words, if we made this house, this is where you're going to live from now on? Behold, heaven and the highest heaven cannot contain you. How much less this house which I have built. So Solomon, very well aware, God can't leave heaven and be here. We can't capture God, put him in a house here. He says, have regard to the prayer of your servant and to the supplication, O Eternal my God, to listen to the cry and to the prayer which your servant prays before you today, that your eyes may be open toward this house, night and day, toward the place of which you have said, my name shall be there, to listen to the prayer which your servant shall pray toward this place. Listen to the supplication of your servant and your people, Israel when they pray toward this place. Here in heaven, that's where you are. We know you're in heaven. We know you're not here, but your presence is here. Here in heaven, your dwelling place. So Solomon never thought that God was going to dwell here. Hear and forgive, he says. Now he's talking to God about this. If a man sins, now he begins to list a list of seven different issues, seven different problem situations which can come up for Israel and for God's people. And you'll see them here, and he starts with this first one. If a man sins against his neighbor and is made to take an oath, and he comes and takes an oath before you, your altar in this house, then hear in heaven and act and judge your servants, condemning the wicked by bringing his way on his own head and justifying the righteous by giving him according to the righteous act or his righteousness. When your people Israel are defeated before an enemy, now we go from a problem between people to a defeat in war because they have sinned against you. Now, if Solomon knows, if the people start going off, God's going to let them be defeated. If they turn again, however, and confess your name and pray again and make supplication to you in this house, then hear in heaven and forgive the sin of your people Israel and bring them back to the land which you gave to their fathers. When the heavens are shut up and there's no rain, now here comes the problems. Because they have sinned against you. Now, here's a drought, okay? And they pray toward this place, and they confess your name and turn from their sin when you afflict them. Hear in heaven and forgive the sin of the people, your people Israel. Indeed, teach them the good way in which they should walk, and send rain on the land which you have given, to these people in inheritance. If there is famine and disease... Now, famine leads to disease. We know that. And almost always, when you use the word famine, you almost have always the next word is pestilence, which means disease epidemic. Famine leads to pestilence. Why? Because when there's famine, people are malnourished. Their immune systems are low. Diseases are rampant. And that's why you have this statement. If there's famine and disease... If there's mildew, locusts, grasshoppers, in other words, these various diseases and problems, if their enemy besieges them in the land of their cities when the plague there, when in other words, they're weakened, the plague is there, whatever sickness there is, whatever prayer or supplication is made by any man or all your people Israel, each knowing affliction of his own heart and spreading his hands toward this house, then here in heaven, your dwelling place. He knows where God dwells. It's in heaven. And forgive and act and render according to all his ways, whose heart you know, for you alone know the hearts of all the sons of men. Isn't that interesting? Who knows the hearts? Who knows what you think? Who knows what I think? Who knows what each person thinks? You know the heart of the sons of men. That's a very important statement. That's why you and I cannot judge what somebody else really feels and believes inside their heart. We can only judge their actions. I can judge an action, whether it's a good action or a bad action. I can judge their words, whether it's a good word or a bad word. But I cannot judge what they think inside. That I can't. Only God can do that. That they may fear you all the days that they live in the land and have given to their fathers. Also concerning foreigner. Now here you have the people, your immigrants and people come in, which is not of your people Israel. When he comes from a far country for your namesake. In other words, they hear about the God of Israel. I want to go to that land. I heard about these righteous judgments. I heard about the way they treat, their women, they treat their people. I want to go there because that's a better land. For they will hear of your great name, verse 42, and your mighty hand and your outstretched arm when he comes and he prays toward this house, even a stranger, when he prays toward this house, then hear in heaven your dwelling place and do according to all which the foreigner calls to you, in order that all the peoples of the earth may know your name, to fear you, as do your people Israel, that they may know that this house which I have built is called by your name. Here is the house of the Eternal, the house of Yahweh, the house of God, the house of Elohim. I mean, when a stranger does it, he says, you know, I went there and I prayed, and God answered me, and God blessed me. When your people go out to battle against their enemy, by whatever way you shall send them, and they pray to the Eternal toward the city which you have chosen and the house which I have built for your name, men here in heaven, then hear in heaven their prayer and their supplication and maintain their cause. When they sin against you, for there is no man, now he's recognizing, for there is no man who does not sin. There's an interesting little statement. For there is no man that does not sin. And you are angry with them and deliver them to an enemy so that they take them away captive. Now here again, this last kind of thing is deportation. Now you had disease epidemics, you have famine, you have battle defeats, you have conflicts of interest between two Israelites, you have the stranger, the foreigner coming in, and he has all these different issues. And now we have deportation. They're taken out of the land because you're angry with them. You deliver them to their enemy, and they take them away captive to the land of the enemy. Verse 46, be far off, okay? Or maybe near. If they take thought in the land which they have been taken captive, and they repent and make supplication to you in the land of those who have taken them captive, saying, we have sinned and have committed iniquity. We have acted wickedly. That is precisely what Daniel did in Babylon. You remember when he was there? And he was praying, he knelt down and he prayed toward Jerusalem. Based on this prayer here of Solomon, they all knew that covenant. They all knew what that house meant. They all prayed toward it. And they knew that God would hear if they were really heartfelt and they repented. You see, they have sinned. If they have humbled themselves with supplication and they repent and they have admit their sins, that they've committed iniquity and have acted wickedly. If they return to you with all their heart and with all their soul in the land of their enemies who have taken them captive and pray to you toward their land which you have given to their fathers, the city which you have chosen, the house which I have built for you, for your name, then hear their prayer and their supplication in heaven, your dwelling place, and maintain their cause. You notice how many times in these statements Solomon makes the statement, in heaven, your dwelling place. Here in heaven. They're going to pray. You're not going to hear it in this house. You're going to hear it in heaven because that's where you dwell. And forgive your people who have sinned against you and all their transgressions that they have transgressed against you, and make the objects of their compassion before those who have taken them captive, that they may have compassion on them. In other words, give them favor in the sight of their captors. For if your people and your inheritance, which you have brought from Egypt and from the midst of the iron furnace, that your eyes may be open to the supplication of your servant and to the supplication of your people Israel, to listen to them whenever they call to you, for you have separated them from all the peoples of the earth as your inheritance, and you have spoken through Moses your servant when you brought them out of the land of Egypt, you see, from Egypt, O Lord God. And then he gives this benediction at the end of his prayer, beginning in verse 54. Okay? Here he goes with this long prayer. He says, when Solomon had finished praying the entire prayer and the supplication to the Eternal, he arose from the altar of the Eternal, from the kneeling on his knees. Now here he was kneeling, and his hands spread toward the heavens. He stood and blessed the assembly of Israel in a loud voice, saying, blessed be the Eternal, who has given rest to his people Israel according to his promise, and let no one word has failed of all his good promises which he's promised to Moses. May the eternal our God be with us as he was with our fathers. May he not leave us or forsake us. Now what he should have asked is, may we not leave or forsake him, really. Because God doesn't leave. God doesn't forsake us, does he? Who forsakes? It's us. That he may incline our hearts to himself and walk in all his, that we may walk in all his ways and keep his commandments and his statutes and his ordinances, which he's commanded our fathers, and that these words of mine, which I have made supplication before the eternal, be near to the eternal our God day and night. In other words, I hope God will listen to this prayer, will listen to it, and he will hold these words day and night, that he may maintain the cause of his servant and the cause of the people Israel as each day requires. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the eternal is God. There is no one else. Let your heart, therefore, be wholly devoted to the eternal our God, to walk in his statutes, keep his commandments, as it is this day. So with that, he says this enormous, long prayer and prays to God for all this. Now, you have over in 2 Chronicles chapter 5, in unison when the trumpets begin to blow, you'll see this in 2 Chronicles chapter 5, verse 13. In unison when the trumpeters and the singers were to make themselves heard, they're praising God with one voice to praise and to glorify the Eternal. And when they lifted up their voice, accompanied by the trumpets and cymbals and the instruments of music, and when they praised the Eternal, saying, he indeed is good, his loving kindness is everlasting. Now listen to what happened. Then the house of the Eternal was filled with a cloud, so that the priests could not stand to minister before the cloud. We read that also. But in chapter 7 of Chronicles, chapter 7 of 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. When Solomon had finished this prayer, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and sacrifices. Wow. God demonstrating his approval, his acceptance of this prayer, and all that it said, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and sacrifices. The sacrifices here, God, this is for you. And God came down and consumed it, and listen to what else. And the glory of the Eternal filled the house. That's in chapter 7. Now, the cloud came down originally when they were there. You remember when they were praising God, the cloud came down. When he finished this prayer, the glory of the Eternal filled the house. And the priests could not enter into the house because the glory of the Eternal filled the Eternal's house. That is called the Shekinah. The glory of God. The display of God's power and glory, the Shekinah, it's called. So here, after Solomon finishes this powerful prayer, God himself shows by unmistakable signs that he approved. Now, I think you know that when Solomon started this, let's go on first. Now, in chapter 9, you'll see we're going to talk about God's warning. Now, not very many people get this. And also, in life, 2 Chronicles, let me read 2 Chronicles first of all. You'll see in chapter 7 of 2 Chronicles and dropping down to verse 12. Solomon finished the house of the Eternal, the king's place, successfully, completed all that was planned in the house of the Eternal and in his palace. 2 Chronicles 7, verse 12. Then the Eternal appeared to Solomon at night. Now, he appeared to Solomon prior to that in a dream. You remember when he asked, said, tell me what you want. Request whatever you want from me. I'm going to give it to you. And that's when Solomon said, I would like to have wisdom and knowledge because I'm a little kid. I don't know how to come in and go out. I don't know how to judge this great people of yours. I would like to have all this wisdom and knowledge. So God granted him, and God said, and besides, because you didn't ask for material things, I'm going to give you that. Because you didn't ask for the life of your enemies, I'm going to give you peace all around, and you'll be able to conquer all your enemies. Because you didn't ask for this, and you didn't ask for that, I'm long days, I'm going to give you that too. But here, now, once again, God appears to Solomon at night. He said to him, you can imagine the eternal God appearing to you and saying something to you. It may be in a dream again. It's at night. He may be in his bed. And God says to him very confidentially, very directly, one-on-one, you know, in that one-on-one situation, I have heard your prayer and have chosen this place for myself as a house of sacrifice. If I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, now he's repeating what Solomon had said in the prayer, remember? And my people who are called by my name humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. My eyes will be open, my ears attentive to their prayer in this place. Now, God is what kind of God do we have? A forgiving God, is he not? Once over and over, you know, if the people do this, if they, you know, blow it this way, if they mess up their lives in this way, if they go off and do this sin, you know, we'll answer, listen to them if they return and they say, you know, isn't that life? Isn't that your life and my life? We do something, we say, I'm sorry. Sorry. I got to turn around. I got to repent again. I'm sorry about that. I messed up. And if you pray with your heart and your heart is right for God, God is a forgiving God. Take a look at Psalm 86, for instance. Psalm 86 and verse 5, he says this, directing this Psalm to God, for you, Lord, are good and ready to forgive. Now, a lot of people aren't ready to forgive. you ever people, there are a lot of people I don't feel like forgiving. I'm not ready to forgive. That's what most of us, but you're not like God if you're not ready to forgive. Okay? But God says, you, Lord, are good and ready to forgive, and abundant in loving kindness to all who call upon you. Certainly God was telling Solomon, I heard it. I heard it. And if the people have their repent and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and will heal their land. Now my eyes are open and my ears attentive to the prayer offered in this place. For now I have chosen and have consecrated this house. I'm back now to 2 Chronicles chapter 7. I'm reading all the way through to verse 22 here. Verse 16, for now I have chosen and consecrated this house, and my name may be there forever. I want my name to be there forever. My eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. As for you, now, you're Solomon, you're listening to this. God's talking to you, a personal, individual message. How do you get more intimate with God than God speaking to you? directly. Now we have God's word here. God speaks to us through his word today. But God's there, you know. As for you, if you walk before me as your father David walked, even to do according to all that I have commanded you, and if you will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish your royal throne as I have covenanted with your father David, saying you shall not lack a man to be ruler in Israel. But, verse 19, here's the but if you turn away and forsake my statutes and my commandments which I have set before you, and you go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will uproot you from my land which I have given you, and this house which I have consecrated for my name I will cast out of my sight. In other words, whoever the ruler is, they turn from God, they start worshiping other gods. God says, I'm going to cast it out of my sight, and I will make it, this house, a proverb and a byword among all the peoples. As for this house, which was exalted, everyone who passes by it will be astonished and say, why has the Eternal done this to this land and to this house? That's what they're going to ask. I mean, this is right after the, you know, you finish this house, it's gorgeous, it's brand new, it's all beautiful. I mean, the glory and all the glory of God was there, the cloud was there, the fire was there, the sacrifice was burnt up, and now God is saying, I'm going to tell you something. If you do what's right, you'll be on the throne perpetually. If you turn away from me and you go to other gods, then you're going to be shocked. It's going to be a byword. And they will say, they're going to ask, why has the Eternal done this to this house? Verse 21 and verse 22 will be the answer. And they will say, because they forsook the Eternal, the God of their fathers who brought them from the land of Egypt. And they adopted other gods and worshipped them and served them. Therefore he has brought all this adversity on them. Woo, what a warning. I mean, that's enough. I mean, you're there and God is now talking to you personally. So Solomon is getting it firsthand. You see it in chapter 9. You see in verse 11. We'll go to verse 10. At the end of the 20 years in which Solomon has built the two houses, the house of the Eternal and the king's house. Now in verse 11 you have an inset. Hiram the king of Tyre had supplied Solomon with cedar, cypress, timber, and gold according to all his desire. Then the king Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. He was the king of Tyre now. This is way before the prophecies against Tyre. But Solomon and Hiram became, you know, good friends. David was a good friend to Hiram too. You'll see it in 1 Kings chapter 5, dropping down to 11 and 12. Then Solomon gave, by the way, and it wasn't just that he gave all the stuff to Solomon. Solomon gave him money, like a down payment for things, and he was paying regularly, but Hiram brought a lot of stuff. He came from Tyre, and the cities of Solomon gave him, and they did not please him, and so he, what are these cities you've given me? So they were called the Kabul to this day, for my brother, what do you call it? And Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold. Now this is the count of the forced labor which Solomon did, built this and so on. And you see, Hiram gave Solomon a lot of money, but Solomon in chapter 5, verse 11, Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 cores of wheat as food for his household, 20 cores of beaten oil. Thus Solomon had given Hiram year by year. So Solomon was making sort of payments to Hiram for all this other stuff that Hiram brought. The Eternal gave wisdom to Solomon, just as he promised, And there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and the two of them made a covenant. So Solomon did very well. He had the king of Tyre on his side, and he'll bring some stuff here. And people, you know, he gathered, and he got all kinds of storage. Pharaoh, in chapter 9 here of 1 Kings, in verse 16, for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up. He captured Gezer and burned it with fire and killed the Canaanites who lived in that city, if it were down to his daughter Solomon's wife. And Solomon married one of the Pharaoh's daughters. So Solomon rebuilt Gezer. He built all this. You see what else he did. And he built the storage cities where Solomon had, even the cities of his chariots. He had storage cities. He built towers. He protected Israel. He built walls around some of the cities that he built in Jerusalem. And all the people who were left of the Ammonites, he made slaves of them, and they had to work, you see, and you'll see that. And Solomon did not make slaves of the sons of Israel, but he conscripted them like he would for war. These were the chief officers, and you go on in chapter 9, all the way down to verse 28. Okay? All the way down to verse 28. Three times a year, the Solomon burnt offerings. King Solomon, in verse 26, built a fleet of ships, and they went out. Hiram and his servants, in verse 27, with the fleet sailors who knew the sea, and they went out. Because Tyre was a major center for merchants and interaction around the ancient world, and they sent out ships, the ships of Tyre and ships of Tarsus. They went to Ophir, and they took 420 talents of gold from there and brought to King Solomon. So King Solomon was now just had so much stuff. Now, in chapter 10, we're going to begin in verse 1. An enormous thing happens. Well, I'll tell you about it next time, because our time is just about up. But chapter 10, there's a message for you here. A message for me here. A message for the entire world here. And Jesus said, it's a message for the people of the great white throne judgment in the book of Revelation, the second resurrection. We're going to read that message. It's a huge message, and it's very interesting and very, very well said for all of us. And we'll talk more about that in our next sermon.